Hello. My name is Sandra, and I'm an alcoholic. Please bear with me. I'm a little bit nervous. I will never forget the best decision that I've ever made, which was on June 16th of 2013. The decision that I made was the decision to stop drinking. And the reason is because I could not handle it. I was not a normal drinker. The day I decided to stop drinking was awful. I had a terrible hangover. It was like the worst one I'd ever had, and I was crying. And I was laying on my bed, and I had a pile of tissues that I had used, and I was trying to figure out what I needed to do and knowing I needed to stop drinking. But the night before that, I couldn't remember. I had blacked out. I woke up, and I didn't know where I was. And a friend came in laughing and said, "Oh, we had such a great time partying and drinking," and I didn't have the same perspective. I was completely drunk. But my friend was saying, "Oh, it was lots of fun." And I asked, "You know, how much did I drink?" And my friend said, "Oh, about 10 bottles of wine." 10 bottles of wine. Of course I blacked out. So I contacted a person who was in the program, and I asked a lot of questions. And I said, "You know, I really need to stop drinking, but I don't know what the next step is. I'm not familiar with this." So they gave me, you know, lots of encouragement and information, and they talked about going to a meeting, an AA meeting. And I said, "Well, what do you do at those?" And you say, "You sit and you watch, you know, whatever the topic might be, and, you know, you share." And I said, "Well, how often?" And they said, "Oh, well, you know, once or twice a week, whatever. You know, it depends." And I said, "What about an interpreter?" And they say, "Well, there's some meetings that have those." And I said, "Okay. So I kind of did, you know, well, let me back up. I looked for a meeting that had an interpreter in my area, my hometown, and I couldn't find one, and it was quite a struggle for me. I wanted to stop drinking. I wanted to go to a meeting. You know, hearing people can go to any meeting, you know, whatever time it's offered, and I couldn't because of the lack of interpreter, and that was hard. Then one day, I ran into a sponsor. Actually, really, that person had not become my sponsor yet. That was the person that would become my sponsor. And they, you know, this person was in the program, and I asked, you know, "Would you be my sponsor?" Now, at this point, I had been 30 days sober, and I asked my sponsor how many days sober they had been, and I think they said like 15 or 16 years, and I was excited. I was like, "Yes, okay." So we set up, and every week we had a meeting where we sat down, and at first I was not willing to go through this. You know, when I saw that big book, and I saw everything that I had to do, and it was so overwhelming, and I didn't understand it, and there was so many pages, and you know, and so, you know, we went back to the whole, okay, we've got to go to meetings, you know, once or twice a week, that's fine, okay, I can commit to that, however, I just don't have the time. My sponsor said, "That's funny, you don't have time to go to a meeting twice, but you have time to go here and there and everywhere else to party and drink." And I thought, you know what, I need to rearrange. I need to focus on me. And I started taking the time to go to the meetings. And wow, the feeling that I had, that everybody had that commonality, was very inspiring for me. It was very emotional. I was very emotional. What's interesting is because back in the time when I was drinking, I suppressed how I was feeling. I didn't share my emotions. And I wasn't honest. I didn't have a good relationship with my family or my friends. So as time moved on, I just started feeling kind of stir crazy. I missed my bottle. I missed my friends. I wanted to go drink. So I used my tools to, you know, abstain from that. I would go to meetings. I tried making new friends, brothers and sisters in wellness, and trying to find that commonality. And I developed a closeness with them. My friends that I used to drink with, that friendship faded. They decided I wasn't important anymore because I wouldn't go out and I wouldn't go drinking. And I was okay with that. I accepted it. I had to go through that process of acceptance. You know, that's a different world. My world is a different world. I'm the one that's changed. So time moving on yet again, I hit the 1-year mark. a 1 year sobriety, and that wasn't easy. Okay, you have to forgive me for going back and forth on my timeline. I'm a little nervous. Okay, so prior to that, my father's side of the family, it was generationally a heavy drinking family. So I grew up seeing alcohol as a very common thing in the house, you know, the drunkenness and the fighting. And I thought that was life. That was normal. And as I said, it was the family, my father's side, drunk heavily. So that was not only my life, but my family's life as well. I would meet with my sponsor every week. I went to meetings, and there was a few of them that I stood and shared in. So I hit my 1 year mark. Oh yeah, right. I was talking about the emotional part. Okay, so I had stopped drinking, and I could see, you know, my honesty, my feelings, you know, a lot better, a lot easier. Now, it wasn't immediate. It took time. You know, I cried a lot. And I remember asking, when am I going to stop crying? And they said, you know, it takes time. And I'm like, I don't understand. I don't think this is ever going to stop. I felt like all I did was cry from sunup to sundown. Inside, I just felt like I had this deep well that I had to just work through. And you know, I mean, I went through an abusive relationship with a woman. I'm a lesbian. And, you know, I went through a relationship with a woman for 23 years that was not healthy. And I tried to hide my pain from that. And, you know, it was relationship after relationship. And I never really focused on myself. And I realized it was time to start focusing inward, to focus on me. So I'm now at almost the 2 year sobriety mark. Yay for me. And now I am more willing. I'm more forgiving. I'm more accepting. Before, I felt like I was, I was sensitive. I react fast, you know, emotionally. But now I feel like I take it one day at a time. You know, if something comes up, I kind of zen and pray about it. And I do wish my father was still alive. My father worried about me and my drinking habits. He passed away 5 years ago. And I regret that because I stopped drinking after he passed away. But I know he's watching me. My mom passed away in January, and it was the first death in the family that I was sober for. And I wanted to drink, but I looked at my tools and I used those, and I had friends that were, you know, in recovery with me and supported me. I'm really thankful for my brothers and sisters in recovery that have supported me all the way. You know, whatever I've went through or for, they've supported me, and it's been great. If it wasn't for that, I'd probably still be drinking. So the meetings work. Seeing my sponsor every week works. You know, making excuses and saying I'm busy and I don't have time, that's bullshit. You have to make time. You made time to drink, so make time for your meetings, for seeing your sponsor, for contacting your friends in recovery, all of those things. It does work. I've been sober for 2 years.
Thank you. Thank you, Sandra. I want to introduce the next speaker. Her name is Deb. Deb?
I'm not going to be reading and signing, so I'm just going to kind of give it up to my higher power and just be here with you guys. Hi, guys. My name is Deb. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for coming. I am nervous, but that's okay. I know it's normal. I don't know what I'm going to say. We're just going to go through it, and it's going to be all right. I want to thank this beautiful lady who just gave her testimony. 2 years. Wow. You know, I look at that, and I find it very inspiring. I'm emotional right now. And I already told the interpreters that I'm really nervous because I want to be able to make sure that I am working in unison with them. And, I don't know what they're saying. I don't know if the voice is matching my intent. And so if you hear something that's off, don't blame me. I'm up here doing my part. The rest is down there. Those lovely interpreters, you can blame them. All right. Anyway, I'm just teasing the interpreters. I love to razz them. It's good to give them a hard time. Okay, so I really don't know where I'm going to start. So I guess my sobriety date, it's in the timeline date, not a date with someone. Okay, so August 16th, 1992. I cannot believe how from that point to this one has looked like. I never really dreamt that I would be standing here, that I would be honored, that in an international AA meeting, I just, when I was asked, I thought that's impossible. You know, I just feel it's such a huge honor. So whoever it was that asked me, thank you. I became sober. Oh, my sign for straight and sober. Good grief. Okay, so I became sober in Cleveland, Ohio. When I walked into this process, let me give you a little bit of background. I was born and raised in, even though I was deaf, I never went to a deaf school. I was raised in the hearing world, and I was raised orally. I also have a deaf brother, so he went to Texas School for the Deaf. That was his upbringing. So I really don't understand the difference, but regardless, that was the way I grew up. So when I came into AA, I thought, sure, I can do this. No problem. This is going to be easy. But when I realized that I had to start being honest with myself and stop covering everything up, and that whole, oh, I'm bigger than this. I can do this. No problem. And when I really started looking that I had a lot of work to do, especially my fourth step, I thought, oh, that's horrible. I don't want to do that. It's not going to help me. But when I really started struggling and working with it and untying me, and working with being honest with myself. Okay, I'm just making sure the interpreters can see me. I'm going to move to the side. Can you? You can see me, right? Okay. All right, so the more I had to get to know myself, I had to realize that being deaf was a difficult thing for me. It was very hard for me to swallow, to accept, to ask for help. I'm not good at asking for help. Especially, the big book, the 12-12, all of those, when it's talking about those, I thought that's impossible. This was written back in 1935. This is a different day and age. So I'm still learning. Even today, I'm still learning, and that's okay. But I do know that I can step out and I can ask somebody, okay, what does that mean? I don't understand what this is. And it took me a very long time to comprehend the way this process, the steps work. While I was living in Cleveland for 15 years, it was just very... 18 years. It was very limited access. There was maybe one or two. And if it was, I was lucky, the state might provide an interpreter that I could use. But most of the meetings that I went to, I did not have that. And there was one meeting I'll never forget. Sometimes I have to do, my work with my sponsor one-on-one. But I look back and I'm really, really grateful because it encouraged me to go to more meeting. My former sponsor told me, if you go to the meetings and if you sit there and if you can get one word out of that meeting, then it's worth it. It's good enough. And all the words that are said in a meeting, can you imagine? She's saying one meeting. And I'm thinking, okay, so if I grab one word, what do I do with that? That just led me to want more. I'm just forever grateful that I am still sober today. And that is truly a gift. As she said earlier, without you guys, I can't do it on my own. I could not have done. She's absolutely right. I could not have done this on my own. I would still be drinking today. I met the woman that I'm spending my life with, my wife, and she was born in Columbus. And oh, I'm sorry. Cleveland. And so approaching that, I knew, you know, within that process, I knew that I couldn't continue to stay in that relationship. I knew that, you know, if I was going to stay, then that kind of lifestyle, I was going to drink. And I wasn't willing. I was not willing to ask for help. I was too proud. I had too much of an ego. You know, you don't know better than me. So this is the way that I approached life. This was how I dealt with things. So that was at that point in Ohio. I moved to Texas. There was more accessibility there. I was able to go to more meetings and things like that. And I can remember there was one that I went to and they said, okay, they're provide an interpreter. And I said, okay, great. So I made plans to go, and then they had their budget cut. Oh, we're only down to two meetings. So I was like, oh, really? Again? So once again, I'm not going to have access to this meeting. So I just put it in the hands of my higher power, and I said, okay, it's you. It's all you. So there was a meeting up in San Antonio 5 years ago. And my higher power is so good and put so many people in my path. And I'm so thankful to one woman who, you know, gave me a pamphlet talking about not breaking the traditions. And, you know, all of these people came in, and we finally got a meeting that was set up that we could, you know, that we could consistently hold. And it was not just about the 12 traditions, but that's where it started. And I just, it's a deaf access committee. And it was great. It was beautiful. So the last 5 years has been unbelievable for me. 4 years, excuse me. It's just been completely overwhelming because this is the first time that I've been able to see and comprehend the whole thing. And it's really, really quite hard for me, to be honest, because I'm still going, okay, now that I have access, what do I do with it? The whole English ASL, that transition is hard. I don't do well in solid ASL. I don't do well in solid English. I'm somewhere in the middle, and it's a lot of work for me. So I had to get a sponsor that was willing to sit down and really, you know, tear this apart and, you know, how to just really look at the essence of what it is, that this is the solution. And I really, prior to this, I really didn't get that. You know, I went to meetings and I tried to listen and I tried to get what, you know, I could get. And people said, you know, you need to share. And I said, what? How can I share if I don't understand what's going on? But it's different now. I am able to express myself. I'm able to share me and my story and what I'm going through. And I think, wow, what a beautiful part of the fellowship of this process is. And I do hope that I'm not offending anyone, the deaf community. But I learned previously through a sponsor. And my sponsor said, don't label. You know what? Deaf, hearing, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's a we program. This is a we program. It's all of us together. If you don't understand, get a paper and pencil and sit down and teach a hearing person and let the hearing person learn and vice versa. But you know what? It's a hand-in-hand process. And that's our goal in the Austin Access Committee. It's being a part of a service. And it was the first time that I got that light bulb went on. And, you know, so many people said, you know, service is, you know, is a key and, you know, that's important. And people said, you know what, just get up and shake someone's hand. And I thought, what's the point in that? All that does is pass germs, but I get it now. I don't know if I have time, but I wanted to tell you, I ran into two beautiful ladies today that are a big part of my recovery. They're both hearing. And I'm very grateful to see them. They saw my struggles as I went through this committee process in Austin. And I don't know if they're in the room, in Cleveland, excuse me. But I just wanted to thank them, both of them, because they're a huge part of my life. So again, going back to the solution, it's working the steps. It's going to the meeting. It's cleaning your house. It's don't drink. It's being of service and trust. Trust, that's so important. My higher power and my relationship with my higher power is so, so much better and deeper than it used to be. It used to be that I'd think of the word God and I'd think, what? No, never me. But I found out during this process that God, G-O-D, God, is something that I pick what that means to me. Higher power. You know what? People would say, you know what? Look at a chair. If you don't believe in the God that is, you know, the typical meaning of it, look at a chair and say, okay, that's your God. Borrow somebody else's God. You know, if they believe in it, you do too. You know, whatever that means to you, whatever it takes for you to get closer to God. You know, it doesn't have to be the type that you cross yourself with or the kind that you throw your hands in the air and praise. It's not that. But my God has carried me this far, and He hasn't dropped me yet. I'm still sober today. I've been working the steps. I've been going to the meetings. I've been talking to my brothers and sisters. I've been doing all these things, and it's a beautiful process. So if you're new, don't leave before the magic happens. Keep going on. I mean, you see me. Look at me. In my 19 years of sobriety, I was living in Austin at the time, and, you know, I've hit moments, but there have been times where I said, you know what, I'm ready. This is too much. Forget it. I just want to pick up a drink. And I'd go, you know what? Wait. I'm going to pray first. I went home and I told my wife, and she said, you know what? I suggest you call your sponsor. So I did what she said, and I called my sponsor, and I went through the whole process, and it's a beautiful thing. I'm still sober, and I thank God, and I thank you. So I guess that really wraps it up. Thank you.
Wow. Let's thank Deb for such a wonderful testimony of sharing. Our next speaker is Yale. Come on up, Yale. All right. Okay. My name is Y-A-E-L, Yale. My last name is Shanner. I'm an alcoholic. First thing I want to say to you is that I am inept as far as my sign language. So please be patient with me. My friend is going to help me out, and that'll be great. I became sober in Dayton, Ohio, in May 18th, 1980. All right. I'm sorry. I was 34 years old. I'm sorry, 34 years sober. I was 34 years old when I became a member. Like Deb said, a lot has happened in my life over the years. When I thought about coming here, I thought about my friend Francine in England, who said, the important thing is the message of AA.
And so it's not me.
It's not about me, right?
My experience
in AA. I didn't come into AA to stop drinking. I came into AA. I don't know, because I really didn't know what to do. And I was in pain. I was depressed. I hated the world. I hated myself. I didn't know what to do. The year before I came into AA, I had been to jail 45. I'd been put in jail 45 times, including DUIs, drunk driving. They told me that they said, "I think you may be an alcoholic." I said, "No way, not me. I'm a drug addict. I'm not an alcoholic." But I thought about that. I thought about that.
So, finally, they gave me a schedule.
Finally, they gave me a schedule. For meetings. They had a Monday night meeting for beginners. So I went. I didn't know what would happen. I just opened the door. I stepped in. And my world turned upside down. It changed.
So much.
All
that's out there.
I didn't know all of this was out there. I could leave my past behind. I can release myself from my history. I met my first sponsor that night.
And that started my journey.
With AA. I had something I had planned to talk about, but I have forgotten it. Hang on just a second. Let me look at my notes.
Okay. So, AA gives us all tools.
So, AA gives us tools.
Tools of life.
Tools of life.
Other
people had those tools or got those tools somewhere, but I did not have them.
Life inept.
Mine was life inept. I didn't know. I didn't know how to be a friend with other people. I've always wanted things from people, but I was never willing to give back. I was selfish.
And self-centered.
It was all about me.
So, AA told me.
AA said, "Yeah, you can come in and you can listen.
Shut up.
But you have to shut up.
Learn.
First thing you got to do is learn."
So, when I
Joined AA, when I came in, I could hear it this time in this ear. I could hear voices out of my right ear, but not in my left. I could hear somebody speaking, or if we were in a small group, I could hear. And the larger meetings, if I set up pretty close, I'd still be able to hear. So that's how I came into AA. So I would attend the meetings on a regular basis. I would listen. I would read in the big book. And other things.
But then, let's see. So, I moved.
So I moved to different locations. And I finally moved here in Atlanta in 2002. In 2006, I lost the hearing in my other ear. It's gone. So I don't hear anything out of either ear.
I didn't panic.
For my hearing,
I know other deaf people.
I know other deaf people, so it runs in my family. It's hereditary.
But
But I panicked. Why? Why did I panic? Because what would I do at the AA meetings? There were no interpreters. And I really can't understand. I really didn't understand interpreters in the past. But I do now. I do now. But I didn't know what to do at the time. I couldn't hear. So I would use my tools. AA tells me to look for solutions.
Look for solutions.
And pray about finding the solutions. And then pray for help. To do that solution.
For different things, and I found.
So I looked for solutions, and I did find an online AA group. It's SOS. It sounds of sobriety. I found that group online.
Oh!
Let me back up. I forgot something. Something that's very important. There was a nice young man who had interpreted for me for about a year so that I would be able to go to my regular AA meetings. But then he left. So he was no longer able to do that. So I looked and I found the SOS meeting there and I started attending. And I met online some people.
Clark G.
He's passed away. 3 years ago. But that person started the meetings online.
Doda. Deb.
And Deb.
Doda.
From Doda.
And then Virginia.
And then Virginia.
Virginia from California.
Oh, from California, yeah.
She started another
meeting online. Doda.
Text.
It was like kind of like of a text chat meeting. We use ASL and we use text chat, video also.
So then. Then what's next? See, my higher power
has led me
from one
to another to another.
And so then, I think it was Virginia that.
I think it was Virginia that told me about
DRC,
the Deaf Recovery Community
online. Facebook.
It's a Facebook group online.
And that opened up
the world. It was a new world for me.
We have a meeting here in Atlanta,
in the Atlanta area.
That's how I met
the interpreter that had started out helping me on Sunday afternoons at 4. If you're still here in Atlanta on Sunday, please come to our meeting. It's NABA, N-A-B-A.
Okay, so.
All right, so.
But for a few years, maybe.
For a few years, the two of us,
Carrie,
Tavis did, showed some other people would show up. And then 2 years ago,
we had a new treatment center
here in Atlanta.
Hope House.
It's called Hope House.
For men. And,
it's set up for men, and there is a home. It's also for homeless people, for men. Currently, it's only for men, and they started coming to our meetings.
So now we have a few people
coming to our meetings.
So my higher power
has really helped me again.
Again.
And my higher power will help me again.
That from AA.
And I learned that from AA.
I owe my life to AA. So, an awesome international.
And there's an awesome international, awesome international group. I went to
Canada.
Oh, this international convention is just awesome.
1985.
I started in 1985. I went to the one in 85. It was awesome. But this one is just, oh, so cool. It's fucking awesome. So we are here to celebrate life. 80 years of AA.
I wasn't born
that time. I was born in 1935. I wasn't born in 1935. It was 10 years before I was born. AA started.
Thank all those people.
Thank God. Thanks all those people.
Okay.
Who's carried the message. I think that's enough for me. Thank you.